The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the June-July issue of Scout Life, and as well as the latest July-August issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin with an article that we shared with you earlier, but it deserves recounting once again regarding the Olympics. She rules the pool from Scout Life. The greatest female swimmer of all time is headed to the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. At an age when most of us are barely comfortable getting our feet wet, Katie Ledecky was a natural in the water. When Katie was a toddler growing up in Bethesda, Maryland, her parents noticed how she was totally comfortable in the pool. More than 20 years later, Ledecky has already achieved more than most athletes could ever dream of. She has won 7 Olympic gold medals and 21 World Championship gold medals, the most in history for a female swimmer. Her 6 individual Olympic gold medals are a record in women's swimming. In short, she is the GOAT, greatest of all time. Ledecky's breakthrough moment came at the 2012 Olympic Games in London when she was just 15. It was there that Ledecky shocked the world, winning her first Olympic gold medal in the 800-meter freestyle and breaking the world record in the process. It was a moment that would change her life forever and catapult her into the spotlight as one of the brightest stars in swimming. But Ledecky was just getting started, more than a decade of dominance. Over the years that followed, she continued to dominate the world of swimming, winning medal after medal and breaking records along the way. Her signature event, the freestyle, is her kingdom, and she is its ruler. Most swimmers have strengths and weaknesses. Maybe they're elite sprinters, meaning they can swim super fast over short distances, but they don't have the endurance to keep it up over long distances. Or maybe they have the stamina to outlast opponents over long distances, but aren't that great in the shorter races. What makes Ledecky unique is her ability to do it all. Her dominance in the freestyle events is remarkable, with victories in the 200, 400, 800, and 1500-meter freestyle events. She can beat you in the short run, and she can beat you in the long run. I have the approach that every race is a sprint, she says. Some races are just longer sprints than others. Ready for 2024. Ledecky is now 27, and she doesn't appear to be slowing down. She heads into this summer's Olympic Games as one of the favorites. The secret to her success? She still trains harder than anyone else, pushing herself to the limit and never settling for anything less than her best. I try to make the good days great and take something positive from the days I'm not feeling good, she says. Michael Phelps, probably the greatest male swimmer of all time, is impressed. She's somebody who is willing to dream as big as you can possibly imagine, Phelps says. That's what you need. She is doing things that women have never done before because she isn't afraid to think outside the box. She isn't afraid to give everything she can possibly give. The other Katie. Katie Grimes might be the second best person named Katie in the world of competitive swimming, but she takes a back seat to no one. Grimes, 18, is one of the youngest members of Team USA. She placed 4th in the 800-meter freestyle at the 2020 Summer Olympics and is hungry for more in 2024. Grimes has proven herself to be a strong open-water swimmer in which athletes compete in environments such as rivers, lakes, and the sea. In a 2021 interview, Katie Ledecky says she told Katie Grimes, "You're the future." The future arrives in Paris in 2024. Fast facts. What? The Olympic Summer Games. A worldwide sports competition usually held every 4 years. When? July 26th to August 11th. Where? Paris, France. Watch on NBC and Peacock, as well as the Olympic Channel on NBC Olympics.com. Les Mascottes. The Paris 2024 mascots are the Phrygians, characters based on an ancient symbol that means freedom. Phrygia was a kingdom in what is now called Turkey. They were allies of France for many years. Other United States athletes to watch. Simone Biles, gymnastics. Biles is no gymnastics, is to gymnastics what Ledecky is to swimming, the greatest of all time. She was the all-round champion at the 2016 Olympics and took home a bronze medal on balance beam in 2020. Victor Montalvo, breakdancing. Yes, breakdancing is really a sport in the 2024 Olympics, and Montalvo is one of its stars. The athlete, known as B-Boy Victor, won the gold medal in a world competition in 2022 and hopes to be just as good in Paris. Caleb Dressel, swimming. Dressel won 5 gold medals at the 2020 Summer Olympics. He specializes in the freestyle, butterfly, and individual medley events. He holds world records in multiple events and has a legit chance to break some of his own records in Paris. Chuck Aoki, wheelchair rugby. Team USA's leading scorer, Aoki, already has 2 silver medals and 1 bronze. He's hoping to lead his team to gold at the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games. Sophia Smith, soccer. The United States women's national team has been dominant for decades, but is currently going through a period of change. Many of its older players have retired, opening the door for young stars like Smith. Oksana Masters, paracycling. Masters will compete in the 2024 Paralympics. Born with damage to her legs, she originally earned medals in skiing. She's just as dominant in paracycling, in which she pedals with her arms instead of her legs. Jimmer Fredette, 3-on-3 basketball. Fredette played college basketball at Brigham Young University and professional basketball for several years in the NBA and in China. But he really shines in international 3-on-3 basketball, an entertainment version of the sport in which each team has only 3 players on the court at a time. Griffin Calapinto, surfing. Surfing is now an Olympic sport. Calapinto already has wins on the World Surfing League Tour and is hoping for his first taste of Olympic glory this summer. And finally, Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone, track. McLaughlin-Levrone is one of the most dominant track athletes in the world. She broke the world record in the 400-meter hurdles, then broke her own record twice after that. Now, moving on to Sports Illustrated for Kids, we're going to go to page 8 for Who's Who in Sports. Second line. Phil Foden, Manchester City midfielder. His height is 5'7", his weight is 154 pounds. He was born May 28, 2000, hometown Stockport, England. Playing in a more attacking role, Foden scored a career-high 19 goals, including 2 on the final day of the season as Manchester City won the Premier League title. He was named PL's Player of the Season. Foden represented England on the 2020 World Cup, scoring 1 goal and assisting on 2 others. But did you know, with this year's championship, Man City became the first team to win 4 consecutive titles in England's top division? Jalen Brunson, New York Knicks guard. His height is 6'2", his weight is 190 pounds. He was born August 31, 1996, hometown, New Brunswick, New Jersey. During a season in which he averaged a career-best 28.7 points per game, Brunson was named to the first All-Star team. In the playoffs, he upped his scoring average to 32.4 thanks to a string of 4 consecutive games with at least 40 points. Brunson also averaged 7.5 assists per game in the playoffs as the Knicks advanced to the conference semis. But did you know the last player with 4 straight 40-point games in the NBA playoffs was Michael Jordan in 1993? Mary Stoyana, Texas A&M Aggies, tennis. Her height is 5'6". She was born May 6, 2003, hometown, Southbury, Connecticut. The number one singles player in the country, Stoyana, led Texas A&M to its first women's tennis national championship. She finished the season with a 38-4 record, with 26 of those wins coming against ranked opponents. Stoyana, who was named the SEC Player of the Year for the second straight time, also finished the season ranked number 3 in doubles with her partner Maya Kupres. But did you know TCU won this year's NCAA Men's Tennis Championship? Warm-up at the movies, page 14. Channel changer. Daisy Ridley stars in a new film about revolutionary swimmer Gertrude Ederle. If you want to get from England to France, there are several options. You can take a 90-minute ferry across the English Channel. There's a train that goes through a tunnel that can do the trip in 35 minutes. A few years ago, an inventor made the journey on a hoverboard. Or, if you're really ambitious, you can swim the 21 miles of frigid water separating the two countries. Prior to 1926, only 5 people, all men, had made the swim, and none faster than in 16 hours. Then Gertrude Trudy Ederle, a 20-year-old from New York City, made the crossing in just 14 hours and 31 minutes. Trudy's remarkable story and the obstacles she overcame, including criticism from men who didn't think it was proper for women to swim and a harrowing case of measles, is told in the new film, The Young Women and the Sea, which is streaming on Disney+. Trudy is played by Daisy Ridley, a.k.a. Rey from Star Wars. Ridley faced her own challenges, such as barely knowing how to swim. "I could not do the front crawl before this film," she told Jaden and Hudson Springer in a video interview for SI Kids. "I usually don't like swimming out in the open water. I like being in pools, and I like having my feet in the sea." There were the critters in the water with her. It was quite scary. They weren't sharks, but there were jellyfish. "So I was very scared I was going to get eaten by something," Ridley says. She didn't, of course. Like Ederle, Ridley thrived. And the end result is a movie that both entertains and inspires. Drafted duos. Getting one draft pick right can put a team on the path to success. But when it nails two or more top selections in 1 year, look out. Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams, Chicago Bears. That couldn't have worked out much better for the Bears. Huh? NFL.com ranked Williams and Odunze as the number 1 and number 3 prospect in the class. An unprecedented run on quarterbacks ensured that the Bears were going to get a great value with the 9th pick. But to get Odunze, a player who had been compared to Larry Fitzgerald, was a dream scenario. 2024, Cameron Brink and Rekia Jackson. Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever dominated WNBA draft headlines this year, but two teams picked twice in the first 7 selections. The Sparks took Stanford's Brink above left and Tennessee's Jackson at number 2 and number 4, respectively. Brink was the nation's top defender, while Jackson averaged 20.2 points per game as a senior. The Chicago Sky nabbed a potentially even more formidable back-to-back duo, South Carolina center Camila Cardosa and LSU's Angel Reese. 1979, Messier and Glenn Anderson. And Wayne Gretzky, kind of? Edmonton Oilers. In the 1979 draft, the Oilers accepted being bumped all the way down to the last pick in each round in exchange for the NHL honoring a contract they had signed with the young Gretzky, who would otherwise have entered the draft pool. With the final pick of the first round, they took future Hall of Fame defenseman Kevin Lowe. The Edmonton took Messier in the 3rd round and Anderson in the 4th. The Messier-Anderson combo would form explosive second lines that played behind Gretzky, most famously as wingers on either side of center Len Linesman, in the 1982-83 season. The dynamic duo of Messier and Anderson both eclipsed 100 points with 106 and 104, respectively. Gretzky contributed 196 points on the first line. How's that for depth? 1997, Cheryl Swoopes and Cynthia Cooper. When the NBA started playing in 1997, it credited its first eight teams through a three-pronged draft. First, the 16 best players in the world would be allocated, with each team getting two. Then there would be a draft of overseas pros, followed by a draft of top college players. In the allocation, the league tried to place players in local markets, so the Comets got Texas Tech Swoopes, arguably the most coveted player in the pool. But since Swoopes, above left, was pregnant and would miss most of the first season, the WNBA also gave Houston Cooper, another truly elite star. And it didn't hurt that the Comets were able to add Tina Thompson in the college draft. How lucky were the Comets? Another team, the Cleveland Rockers, didn't net a single future All-Star from their allocated players. Meanwhile, the Comets stars led them to the first four WNBA championships. 2001, Drew Brees and LaDainian Tomlinson, San Diego Chargers. This one is bittersweet for Chargers fans, as they never won a championship with this duo and failed to re-sign Brees after five seasons. Still, it's unbelievable in hindsight that San Diego nabbed these players with their first two picks, Tomlinson at number 5 and Brees with number 32. Brees joined the Saints in 2006 and finished second in MVP voting behind Tomlinson, who set an NFL record with 28 rushing touchdowns. Brees went on to set the single-season passing yards record in 2011 with 5,476, later broken by Peyton Manning. If anything good came from their split, it was the chance for each to be more statistically prolific. 1976, Alan Trammell and Jack Morris, Detroit Tigers. Believe it or not, the 1976 Tigers are the only Major League Baseball team to ever pick two eventual Hall of Famers in the same draft. Even rarer than picking two great players, however, is holding on to them. Plenty of Major League Baseball stars are traded as prospects by their draft teams years before they made their big league debuts. Trammell spent his entire 20-year career as Detroit's shortstop, amassing 70.6 WAR. He was the MVP of the 1984 World Series, in which Morris won games 1-4. 1999, the Sadin Twins, Vancouver Canucks. Just because the Sadins are twins doesn't mean they were automatically going to both be superstars, or that the Canucks wouldn't have to work very hard to draft Daniel, far left, and Henrik. Luckily, Vancouver expended serious draft capital to get the number 2 and number 3 picks in 1999 and keep these Hall of Famers together. 1996, Derek Fisher and Kobe Bryant. Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers changed the face of their franchise when they signed Shaquille O'Neal in 1996, but just a month earlier, they had laid the foundation for the move when they came away from the draft with a set of guards. Bryant, who was drafted by the Hornets with the 13th pick and traded, and Derek Fisher. Phil Jackson wouldn't take over as coach for a few more years, but already he had 3 points for his famous triangle offense. 2003, Ryan Sutter and Shea Weber, Nashville Predators. The 2003 NHL draft was so stacked that three teams formed franchise-defining cores. Nashville got a ready-made top defense pair in Ryan Suter and Shea Weber. With two first-round picks, the Flyers nabbed Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, who eventually reunited in L.A. to help the Kings to a Stanley Cup in 2012. And the Ducks picked Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, who would be their top playoff scorers during their own Cup win in 2007. What if teams could only draft from their own neck of the woods? Nowadays, the phrase territorial rights in sports usually refers to a dispute over who gets to play on what TV station, or sometimes it comes up during relocation battles. The Oakland A's didn't consider San Jose as a possible new home last year because the franchise had previously ceded the territory to the San Francisco Giants in 1989. Back in the day, these rights meant a lot more. Before MLS loosened its rules in 2022, teams had first dibs on certain players in their homegrown territory. In 1960, the AFL draft started with a territorial round, in which teams could try to nab a college player already popular with their home fans. The player only had to be locally famous, not homegrown, as the Los Angeles Chargers and New York Titans both took stars from Notre Dame. Before 1966, NBA teams got territorial picks, too. The Philadelphia Warriors weren't the worst team in the league when they drafted Wilt Chamberlain in 1959. These arrangements offend our modern sense of fairness. Connor McDavid and Mitch Marner on the Toronto Maple Leafs? No way. But we love when the stars align to put, for instance, a young LeBron James on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Similarly, nobody questions why so many players use free agency as a chance to move closer to home. Really, the idea doesn't sound so bad. Territorial rights would keep players close to their families and friends, especially when they're young and need support systems. They would allow fans to root for the same players through high school, college, and the pros. And the cohesion of amateur and pro ranks would strengthen local community bonds, heighten rivalries, and dramatically curb the proliferation of Yankees hats west of the Rocky Mountains. Among the pro teams, there would be winners and losers. The Miami Marlins could rebuild easily, picking from Florida's endless baseball talent. The Nashville Predators might struggle given that the NHL has never featured a single player born in Tennessee. But theirs might not even be the most interesting stories. Florida Georgia and Bama line. The University of Georgia had five players taken in the first two rounds of the 2024 NFL drafts. The Braves' hometown hero, first baseman Matt Olson, led the league in home runs and RBIs last season. Among the other standouts from the Peach State and Phillies are Zach Wheeler, USWNT winger Kelly O'Hara, and Timberwolves phenom Anthony Edwards. The eighth most populous state, Georgia's sunny climate, has produced plenty of great athletes. The Braves, Dream Falcons, and Hawks would all figure to make out well with territorial rights. But zoom out of the map a little, and it quickly becomes clear the Atlanta teams could be in line for a bonanza. Players from the Florida Panhandle might feel more at home north of the border than in far-off Miami. Plus, there are zero total major league professional franchises in neighboring Alabama and South Carolina. Imagine if the Atlanta Falcons could treat the Alabama, Auburn, and South Carolina football programs as farm teams. Alabama alum Tua Tagovailoa can stick with Georgia native Tyreek Hill, except now they'd be joined by UGA's Nick Chubb and South Carolina-born DeAndre Hopkins. The Jaguars, Panthers, Saints, and Titans would surely sue for a more equitable division of the Southeast. The new Sweden Patriots. Here's the other side of that coin. An area full of teams but low on players. Despite containing many major cities, the Northeast United States features a uniquely bad recipe for creating stars. Less land, cold winters, and crummy college programs. 12 major league teams in the New York City metropolitan area would be left to compete for the players from Rutgers, which isn't a star-producing machine. No offense, Rutgers fans, but the school produced one NFL draft pick this year. New Yorkers might not take too kindly, however, to the idea that they're not the center of the universe. So expect a big push for a rule like the one that allowed the New York Titans to use territorial rights to take Notre Dame's quarterback George Izzo, a native of Ohio, in the 1960 AFL draft. Izzo was not a native New Yorker, but he had appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and that's published in New York. The point of territorial rights was to drum up local interest, and Notre Dame has a national fan base. This system would work out well for the New York teams, their fans, and the players who are picked. Some players have a strong preference to live in the biggest city in the United States. Martin St. Louis, for instance, was born and raised in Quebec, but he would only waive his no-movement clause in 2014 if the Tampa Bay Lightning sent him to play for the Rangers. Maybe players could pick three teams for which they have some regional connection or interest. This would be especially important for foreign-born draft picks. New England is technically closer to Europe than the rest of the North America, but nobody wants to see the entirety of the Swedish national hockey team suit up for the Bruins. I said nobody? Boston fans, don't even think of writing that letter. Territorial rights would allow fans to root for the same players through high school, college, and the pros. And the cohesion of the amateur and pro ranks would strengthen community bonds and heighten rivalries. And here we have a picture of a local hero. I think we recognize him, number 23, with the Irish. Yes, James was a high school star in Akron before he lifted the Larry O'Brien Trophy 35 miles up the road in Cleveland. And here we show a picture here of LeBron holding up the trophy that he brought to his hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. And let's end with what's a call. Number two, acting out. The Medicine Hatters are playing the Bermington Beagles in a basketball game under NBA rules. Hatters player Nuke Patterson is guarding Beagles star Daryl Daniels, who has the ball. Daniels drives to the bucket and bumps into Patterson, who goes flying theatrically to the ground. The referee whistles Patterson for flopping, and when Patterson protests, he receives a technical foul. Birmingham argues that since flopping also carries a technical foul, Patterson be ejected. What's the call? Patterson can still play. Flopping technicals don't count towards ejections. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.